Hey y'all, it's Mother's Day 2020. And today I actually want to take a step outside of the topics that I usually discuss on this podcast and take a moment to address the events that surfaced last week in the story of the shooting of Ahmaud Arbery. And while every story of Black death has broken my heart, something about this case wrecked me in a way that I still have not been able to articulate. And judging by the number of white friends and blog readers on my Instagram blog who reached out after my post last week to ask what steps and what actions they can take to affect change, then I'm guessing Ahmaud's story did something profound to you too. So I've asked two of my dear friends to join me today. They are mothers who are also raising Black sons, and I asked them to come in and help me, one because of energy and just being completely exhausted from this story, but also for a broadened perspective. And I asked them to come in and help me deliver a call to action on behalf of mothers raising Black sons in America. And note that this is inclusive of all mothers raising Black sons, not just Black mothers raising Black sons, because that storyline is the same for them as well. And so I encourage you to dive in and listen. We're sharing stories that are real and raw and personal, and also attempting to lay out a path for what it looks like to move from ally, which is the shock and the hashtags and signing up for the runs, to advocate, which means that you are educating yourself on systemic racism, and you are doing that in relationship with people in your community who can help you on this journey and who you can support. And then you are taking dismantling action within your sphere of control. And so we're going to deep dive on that for a second here, and just share some of our own admonitions and encouragement and considerations for those who are just getting started on this journey. And if you go over to my Instagram handle, which is 2TWO_blue_fish, you can find a list of resources that we have curated with the help of others in this space. But from podcasts to TED Talks to books to documentaries, there are things that you can go and take a look at and start on this journey. So I'll just quickly introduce my friends. We've got Kat. She and her husband, Jordan, they're raising their baby boy, Wyland. She runs her own business. It's called Mischief Managed, which helps support artists. And one of my closest friends, Kiana, who is a therapist, and alongside her husband, she's raising two precious boys, 2.5-year-old Ezzy and almost 1-year-old Eli. So without further ado, I want to jump into this conversation. This Mother's Day, it's an interesting Mother's Day. I know we're all sort of new to this recognition of being mothers. Kat, this is your first with Wyland, and Kiana, this is your and my third already with the boys, but it is kind of weird. You know, I brought us together today because we are all mothers to Black sons, and so the events of this past week are particularly horrifying and alarming. I am referring to the death of Ahmaud Arbery, who's a Brunswick, Georgia man who was violently ambushed and murdered by three racist white men while he was simply out for a jog. I want to note that this incident happened back in February, on February 23rd, to be exact, but it only garnered the attention of the nation when a video of that violent attack, which was filmed
by one of the perpetrators and had been viewed by law enforcement and the district attorney's office was leaked and went viral last week. This past Friday would have been Ahmad's 26th birthday, and today, as my husband and sons shower me with kisses and drawings, and that damn power washer that I asked for, all I can think about is Ahmad's mother, Wanda Cooper, and the immense grief that she is going through right now. While the three of us, you know, talk often, it was pretty much nonstop this week. We haven't spoken today, so first I just want to check in on my friends and do a roll call and just ask how you are doing today. Kat, how are you doing today?
I am doing okay. I think this holiday is always charged for me. I actually was in therapy for about 2 years before becoming a mother, just trying to face the fear of becoming a mother and being a mother in America mostly, and that I wouldn't be able to control the narrative or the death sentence that every child of color gets born into here. And it comes like a wave, you know, and I think especially today, thinking of not just Ahmad's mother, but so many mothers that have to grapple with the idea that they're not in control, that you can work this hard and do everything, make all the sacrifices you can make, and you can't control the scary reality of our world. And I think just trying to take that in with the brightness of children, the innocence that they do bring into every single house, and how they are born with no judgment, no sin, no, you know, like they just want to be loved. And I think I'm trying to take that in and let that overpower and not defeat the reality of today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Key?
I think for me, I'm doing all right. I had to unplug yesterday from social media just so I could just recenter, refocus, actually let myself grieve and really listen to my inner thoughts, like what I was really thinking and feeling about this, because, you know, taking care of the two boys, I often push how I'm feeling aside, and I don't acknowledge it. I don't sit in it. I just, you know, focus on my boys, like, okay, making sure all the meals are done, everything, you know, momming. And I had to be intentional about just disconnecting from everything yesterday so I could just refocus, because it was getting to the point where I was just so I wasn't happy. My heart was literally aching thinking about Ahmad's mom, and like Kat said, like all the other moms who do not have their sons or daughters with them on Mother's Day because somebody took their life for whatever that reason may be. You know, like it's kind of hard to even sit in joy today, because I'm thinking like, dang, like Ahmad's mom, like her son is not with her today. Mm-hmm. Tamir's mom does not have her son with her today. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and the list just goes on. You know, like it's crazy how long the list is. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I think, so today I'm trying to take in and be thankful and acknowledge the blessing that, you know, I do have my boys here with me, and mm-hmm. I'm able to be celebrated by my husband today and celebrate my mom and all of that. But at the same time, you know, I'm still, it's hard. Like, I'm still sad, you know? My heart is very sad.
Yeah, I'm with you. I let the boys watch this episode of Daniel Tiger, and it's like this where the dad is like, have to go somewhere, and Daniel's getting all upset, and the dad's like, look, grown-ups come back, right? And then it really stuck with Harrison, because every single time I go into his room, he's like, you came back. Like, when I go to wake him up from a nap, or when I'm in the morning when I go to get them, he just pops out of that crib and he's like, you came back. And this week, it was like probably Wednesday or Thursday, I walked in the morning and he was like, mommy, you came back. And I thought, what if there's a day where I let him out of the house and he can't make that same promise to come back to me? Like, it hit me hard. And all week I was just taking video of them doing nothing, just like hanging out and breathing and watching their mannerisms, because I was like, what if I don't get to be with them forever? Like, I think that that's what hit me. And it's that, you know, I don't know, we know this is not new for us. These stories are not new for us at all. It's just that we finally have commoditized the technology and democratized platforms where people can share it. And so they're starting to see it. But even in this case, law enforcement and the district attorney's office saw that video. And the only reason we're talking about it right now, like, it's been made so many times, is because we saw that video. And I wanna talk for a minute and understand why this one in particular feels so different than all the other ones that we've talked about. You know, I don't have words for it. I don't have a way to articulate why this one wrecked me so hard, but it's like, it has been the only thing I've been able to focus on all week. And I don't know if you guys have any words to give to that. You know,
why it's different. I just I'm definitely taking in what you're saying, that, you know, just that we can't make these promises. And that's really overwhelming for me, that our sons can't make promises to us, and that we don't get to make these promises back. And I think why this one feels heavier or more palpable is because we are without human interaction for the last almost 50 days. And we, as Black women and as humans, we feel strongest when we are with people. You know, after Trayvon Martin, I put my hood on. I'll never forget, I put my hood on and I walked everywhere, and I needed to see people of color. I needed to see moms. I needed to feel like, you know what? Take a breath in, out. Yes, everything's okay. Everything's okay. And I think right now we don't get to be around people to unpack and to feel the physicality, the energy that we need to feel and touch and hug people and be like, you know what? We lost another one, but we're okay. And we have to somehow self-soothe for the first time. And that is not okay. That's just not okay. And I think that's what's made this bigger and scarier. And and the other thing of why I feel like all of our white allies have come out of the woodwork on this one. Whoa. Hello. Wow. I mean, people I've never seen capitalize and use their platform have come out. And I think that is because we are all online This is undeniable. Usually people are at work, you know, like, oh, I didn't see the news. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have excuses on why we don't see this. And there's no excuses this time because everyone's at home on the internet. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's no excuses. And I think for better, for worse, this is very intense this time. It's just really intense.
I hadn't thought about that aspect until you said it, Kat. And I think you're right. Because normally we could get together and sit with each other, you know, and really just be raw. And I mean, yes, we get to do this like via screen, but it's not the same as being side by side with people who you know are with you in this, you know what I mean? Like who are gonna support you, who you can be raw with. We're not able to experience that right now to the extent that we're accustomed to. And so I think you're so right. Cause I was trying to think, why does this feel so different? And I think that's the big, big, big part of it for me. It's like, I'm not able to really sit with my friends, with my people and unpack this. You know what I mean? And then I also think this time, normally I feel like I was able to be a little more hopeful that, you know, like things are gonna get better. But this time I think it just shook me because it's like, damn, like we can't even go on a run. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I have neighbors upstairs who literally, a white couple, they go running every single day. I see them take off and go on their run around the neighborhood. Not a care in the world. Mm-hmm. And then to know like, and Ezra, my God, like my son, he's only 2 now, but he loves to run. And we've talked about, you know, like encouraging him to run track and stuff when he gets older. And then, I mean, he can't even run and his life not, you know, like this, I think it shook me. It shook my husband. Like he was literally just out on a jog doing what he loves. You know what I mean? And somebody took it upon themselves to take his life. Like,
I think that part of it too is that in no way justifiable. I feel like with so many other cases, people found things to you know, some one data point that they could introduce that would introduce enough doubt for them to feel comfortable saying, well, you know what, we don't know the full story. You know what, well, he actually was doing this. You know what, she, whatever. You know what? It was a mistake that they broke into her house while she was sleeping and got the wrong address, like, et cetera, et cetera. This one, there isn't a single thing you can point to. Like, there's something about it that the fact that it was an ambush, like it was a set up.
But the crazy thing, even with that, is that they're trying to flip it still.
Yeah.
Like I read an article, I shared it with Kat and some others yesterday from CNN, and they're trying to bring up
his background and yeah.
Stuff. Like, what does that have to do with now? Like, why?
It has nothing to do with it.
Man's life. Like,
yeah.
Because if we contextualize people based off of all their past things, then why would President Trump be in office?
Exactly.
You know what? Yeah. The same people want to use this. Same things to go and find petty whatevers. Go ahead and look at my grades in 8th grade. You go ahead and do that. Tell me how I was on the trajectory to be a bad person. Hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think, I don't know. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing how we sift through people's life to find one decimal of incongruity and therefore they're no longer allowed to be treated like a human.
Right.
That so is, then we're
devalue their life, yes, so that you can somehow justify what happened. But I think to your point about the groundswell of allies and support that came out, I think a part of it is like, I mean, it wouldn't be that if that video wasn't there. If that video didn't show the lead up to, you know, there's something about it that it's like the proof is right there in your face that this was, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what the point is of trying to differentiate this from any of the other ones, but I just know that it wrecked me in a way that like I was having chest pains and like unable to breathe this week, you know, like.
I was gonna say, I think even above the video, because this is not the first video, like we've seen plenty of videos of people running away, just like here, and they still getting gunned down. You know what I mean? Like we've seen plenty of videos. I think what made a difference this time around is that so many of us actually post, like Kat said, everybody's home right now.
Yeah.
Everybody's on the internet right now. And because we're not able to sit down with our friends and unpack, many of us, I think the three of us included, we all sat down on our computer and wrote out our feelings regarding it.
Yeah.
And we called out our people. You know what I mean? Like, I know for me, I called out my Black friends and my white friends and my friends that are, you know, other people of color. So it's like, I think that's what's made the biggest difference in regards to, you know, our white allies all of a sudden popping up. Because I've got people who have been a part of my life since I was a teenager, mm-hmm. who this is the very first time that they have hit me up, have texted me long paragraphs of presence in the past and their lack of, you know, showing solidarity in the past and reassuring me like, you know, we love you guys, we're in this with you. And then I get to go and see them, they made posts regarding the situation. I've had so many friends call or text or message, private message me confessing and just asking for forgiveness. And I didn't expect that because in the past I've seen nothing. You know what I mean? Like they're quiet. I'm like, y'all posting about everything else, but when it comes to this, it's like blank. I don't see anything. I don't hear anything. So I think that's what's made it so different is that so many of us spoke up and really and challenged them. Like, dude, you say you love us. You say you love my kids. We're Black. Like, did you
get,
like, we're Black. Like, I know you love us. And some of y'all think we're different, but at the end of the day, it's like, we Black.
Yep.
My Black skin looks just like his Black skin.
Yep.
My boys' Black skin that you love so much that you think are so cute, they look just like him.
And I think, you know, Kiana, you said something so real and that I think a lot of us as parents don't want to talk about, that there's a timestamp on Black babies turning from cute to scary.
Mm-hmm.
When and there is a turn in the adolescence where all of a sudden our Black boys that everyone's like, oh my God, adorable, this is adorable, when all of a sudden they turn, whatever that is for people, that 12, that 14, mm-hmm. that adolescence turn, when all of a sudden they're scary, they're unapproachable, they're intimidating, they're a threat. Mm-hmm. And I think that is just seen right here, even in Trayvon, just a child, mm-hmm. a child. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, I mean, I don't know. And then, you know, seeing this kid, he looks so young. I mean, he looks so young. Mm-hmm. He was young. What age does it turn when our white co-fellow humans on this planet feel threatened? And I'm not sure when that is. And it's alarming in these situations when you have to talk about it out loud, because I think we do feel that.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, he and I were talking on, I think it was Tuesday. And I was saying, like, the first moment of relief that I had, especially through my pregnancy was when the doctor put them both in my hands, which that actually took some time because Harrison went to the NICU first. But when I had both of them in my hands, it was like, okay, we overcame the first battle. They lived. They weren't supposed to, but they lived, and now they're here. Then I was awake and stressed because of SIDS. And I'm like, okay, great. Now we've made it past the phase of where, you know, SIDS typically happens. And then it was eating and chewing on their own, where I feel like I can leave the room. And now, so it almost felt like the older they got, the safer they got. And then this week reminded me that actually the more that they move away from babyhood, the higher the risk.
Yeah,
for them. And that, I think that was a big part of it, where I suddenly was like, oh God, keep them babies forever. Like, keep them right here, babies forever with me, you know. And I think also, Kat, you know, you also are married to a white man, and I think for me, like, when I spoke about, I don't talk about race on social media because I don't think it's the proper medium.
Yeah.
What people want is like that character limited bite size, like, let's get past race in one post thing. And so for me, I just do not have the energy to fight that fight. And there are so many good people out on the front lines doing that. I don't usually talk about it. This time I had to talk about it because I realized when I didn't start hearing from some of my friends and even some of my family, like even some of our white family that I heard nothing from, I was like, shit, like they have disassociated my boys with being black. Like
from this conversation, yes.
Like from this conversation, they don't see that this could be them. And so, you know, I asked
that it is, not could be, that it is them. And I think that's what, wake up, like, wake up, family. This is not, this could be our kids. Those posts are killing me. I'm like, no, these are our children.
Yeah.
We're just one headline away. That's what these stories confirm. Don't you understand?
Right.
We're not in waiting. It's now.
Right.
Yeah. It got me thinking. I was like, you know, I wrote about asking for an action plan. Like I want to hear from you that you understand this and that you have a plan in place that says you realize that when these boys are with you, there are things that you need to, behaviors you need to modify, things you need to do, like, that says to me you realize that. And when I didn't hear things like the kinds of things I want to hear in this plan is that if I'm going to send them to your house for a play date, for a sleepover, which that's rare because I don't even think I like sleepovers. Do you do sleepovers?
I'll do sleepovers.
Yes. So if I'm going to send them to you, I want to know then that you're like, yep, we cleaned up all the toy guns and they're away. And when they're a little bit older, we left a key, or we gave them a key to get inside the house because nobody's going to be crawling through the window. Or you're not going to let them be riding their bikes late at night on the street with all the other kids. Like, you got them pulling home. And if they're going to come to you when they're older and you're going to let them borrow the car, that you've got the registration up to date. These things matter. Yes. In fact, they matter just as much as the fact that every time we go somewhere, everybody knows Harrison needs an EpiPen because he's deathly allergic to peanuts. And I need you to care about this the same way. And if I don't, always stay with me. And I'm going
in. Yeah. I'll never forget. I mean, I don't know what this triggered for you, like what memories as a kid, but for me, the first memory that came back after reading this story was when my brother, you know, we are mixed. My brother and I are like, you know, a perfect shade of like caramel chocolate mix, right? And he is like a straight A valedictorian kid. So I think he does all these things in reaction. We lived in a completely white neighborhood. You know, he did a lot of things so that he was never touched, right? Never taken out of line and taken the wrong way. And he was perfect. And he got his driver's license right on his 16th birthday. Of course, I got in that car. I said, let's go. It was nighttime. It was a joyride. And it was so fun. We played our music loud. I don't remember what we were listening to, but, you know, something. You know, he was into Kanye at the time. And I remember getting to a stoplight and I just barely looked over and my brother said, don't look over. I think those are skinheads. Don't move, you know? And we lived where there are skinhead gangs still, and they're still there. And I'll never forget the terror I felt of just him and I in the car. And we changed our direction. We drove slower. We turned down our music. I mean, I still get the chills right now, feeling like we could have been followed. We could have. Still there? I remember feeling that sense of threat as a young kid. Very palpable. It felt very tangible. No one had to hold a gun to me to know that we do one wrong thing tonight and we're gone. And they didn't need justification. There, you know, there had been no altercation. Just knowing that they were in the next car and that they saw us and we saw them, you know, and now being married to a white man, I think back and I'm like, were those skinheads? You know, like you get so many misconceptions in your head about the white man also that you fear for a long time, just as much as they're doing misconceptions about my brother and I in this car, you know, like, you know, so many misconceptions so deeply at such a young age. And I just wonder now, raising a mixed boy that has beautiful black features and, you know, like this, like red hair, and he's going to be a whole mix of all things Creole and Norwegian and, you know, like just all things. And I don't know what I will tell him when we're driving in a car and I feel like I'm being followed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But it's real, and I feel it all the time, and mm-hmm. I don't know.
Let me tell you, so, you know, we just moved out here. Well, now it's been a year and a half or something like that, and when we first moved out here, it's, like, a great town. Like, we love it. It's nice. Like, people are pretty friendly, and we were looking for a church at first, and we went visiting around, and it was Christmas Eve, and, the boys were just a little over one at that point. So I had them in the like kids room, whatever, and I'm playing with them. And then there was this man sitting in there with his kids. And he was like, oh, you're new to the area? And I was like, yeah. And you know, we just moved right around the corner, blah, blah. And he says, oh, cool. He's like, I'm a police officer. And I was like, okay, well, great to meet you, police officer Dan. And he goes, so I'll probably get to know your kids. And I was like, excuse me, like I'm telling you, like my hair stood up, my back raised, and
I'm sweating right now. Just
right. And I was like, I mean, I called Kiana like immediately after. I'm like, listen to this. And he said, oh, because I'm the police officer at the local school. Like I know all the kids. And I was like, well, you probably should lead with that.
Right.
When you come and talk to me and you say, oh, I will get to know your kids. But you know what I decided that day? It was like, we're living in this small town. You better believe I'm taking my boys down to the station to meet them all. I want you to know them.
Yeah.
Faces. Know, yeah. Know that they're in a good home. Like when you're riding by, say, I know those boys. Those are boys. I'm going to think twice. Like all of those things like that had me thinking about like, oh my gosh. I got to plan ahead, like to be a good mom for me is more than just keeping them clothed and feeding them and getting them to good schools and educating them and all the things. Like it's that, and I got to be thinking all the time about being their publicist.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know? Well, so the real reason, you know, I asked us to come together and talk about this, and I think the stories are great because they humanize, right? And for those who are in our circles and who have asked for this, these are the stories that really help to bring it to life. So I appreciate that. But really, I wanted to do this on this platform because I got so many questions from white friends and acquaintances asking what they can and should do to help. I'm sure y'all did too. And I am exhausted, as I know you both are, and I could not keep up with the requests. And so I believe that this is a critical moment, to your point, Kat, about capitalizing on people's interest, on people's time, on the weight that they feel, and especially now that all three have been arrested. I think it's important now more than ever, because people will start to move away from it. We're already seeing it, right? It's like, oh, okay, they've been arrested, great. And like, it's like this work for that case is just getting started. That's another thing. So I wanna take advantage of this time and help lay out what a path from ally to advocate looks like, right? I'm not just looking for the, hey, I'm here and I support and I'll retweet and repost all the things. Like, how do you get to advocate? So I asked you both to join me to help give a few starters and just point people in the right direction. I want to say, this is not for us to educate, right? I said it earlier, there are so many folks out there, they are doing this work. They are preeminent experts in the history of racism in America. But here are just a few pointers that we've come up with and believe to be important for anyone who's gonna be starting on this journey. So I'm gonna start out with a couple admonitions, and then we've kind of like, you know, talked about these loosely, and we all jump in, you know, where it makes sense. But the first is, come into this space carefully and with an open mind. You have to resist the urge to invalidate the experience of a group of people simply because it's wildly different than your own. Simply because it's wildly different than anything you can imagine. These stories are real. They're not made up. These feelings are real because they're part of our collective story. And we feel that deeply, you know? So I think that that's the first, I mean, that is the biggest barrier that people have to overcome to come into this space and to know that we're all moving at a different pace through this journey as well.
I would say even before that though, like make sure you're in relationship and doing life with people that are different than you. You know what I mean? Because how are they going to hear our stories if they're not doing life with us? Like we can't, like I said before, I feel like things were different, and our response and seeing allies come out of the woodworks was because we, our friends, the people who we do life with, finally saw, were able to read how we really feel. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think before all of that, you need to make sure that you're in relationship and really doing life mm-hmm. with Black people. Mm-hmm. And people who look different than you, you know what I mean? Like who's, and like you said, whose experiences are different than yours. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that it, I think that alone will make people want to do the research, you know what I mean? And that's when they'll feel more comfortable asking the questions and just sitting down and having conversations about it. They have to actually, we have to be doing life with each other, because I'm more inclined to respond to your question if I know you, and if I know you, you know what I mean? Like if I know your heart, I know this isn't just a fad for you. You know what I mean? Like if I know this is something you really genuinely care about and you really and genuinely want to make a difference and show up for our community, then yeah, I'll sit here and I'll answer some questions for you and I'll go back and forth with you. But if I feel like you're just doing this just cause you're bored, because we're in quarantine and you don't have nothing else to do, then miss me with that. Like, I'm not.
And I completely agree. I was going to say the same thing as you, Kiana. Like, the number one thing to me is relationships. You know, like, I've grown up in California, but that doesn't mean that I understand the Latino or the Latina experience. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But guess what? I have tried my darndest to get in that space and to be there and to be accountable and to know that immigration policies matter and to mm-hmm. know that you are a first generation to college and this is what it's been like for you to become an American citizen. And those are stories that I can tell you on my fingers the names of those people, because I have shown up and I have done the hard uncomfortable thing of asking, what is that like for you? Mm-hmm. What is that like for you? I wish white America would sit down and have me come to my house. I'm not looking to come to your house, but have me in your space, have me in your life, and be willing to ask me, what is that like for you? Mm-hmm. What has this week been for you? I had a few friends text me and ask me, and you know what the response was when I was honest? They said, that's devastating. And you know how much that made me feel like seen and heard? All you have to tell me is like, human to human, what was that like for you? And side with me, like take on this burden with me, because I'm grieving.
Yeah.
You want to be a friend, you want to be a human with me, sit in this with me, you know. Yep. And don't try and fix it, don't try and give me some kind of silver lining, do not tell me how we've progressed and it's getting better. Yep. I'm not interested.
Yeah. I think so. That's a great point. Like, let's reverse the order on that. I think, by the way, that discomfort that people feel, like, you got to sit in that. But if you are in relationship with people, it will not feel like you are getting called out. It will feel like you are being called in. And that is a big, big difference there. So, you know, to the importance of relationship, I think to your point, Kiana, about questions, I mean, I hear this all the time where it's like, I'm just scared. I feel like I'm tiptoeing on eggshells. I don't know what to say. And I feel like when I ask questions, people get angry at me. And I mean, all of us will say it right here. We have to engage in the dialogue. Like, there is no way for us. We cannot do this without our white allies and advocates. What's frustrating is when they haven't done the work to learn, and therefore they cannot come into the conversation with the requisite knowledge and understanding to have a meaningful dialogue. That's what I'm looking for. So when you don't have the background, and then you come in and you ask me all kinds of questions, not only does it put the burden and the emotional labor on me to then have to explain all of that worse, it puts me in the position of having to defend my and other people's experiences, and I'm not on trial. Like, we've had what we've had. So I think, like, to me, that's the distinction in being able to come in and ask the questions, is to, one, have the relationship, two, do the work.
Yeah.
Then let's sit down and talk about it, because there are so many different perspectives out there and disciplines and school of thought around this. There is no one perspective. So that's okay. Like, you're going to read some things you disagree with. There are plenty of people I disagree with, yep, in terms of their perspective on this, but I can at least show up and have an informed conversation about it.
Yeah. And I think just also, like, to those allies trying to look to be advocates, because I hope you are out there. So I'm going to talk about it like you are. For those of you, just know, like, just because I'm also still learning about the Black experience too, you know, like, I think you should know that we haven't also arrived. Like, there's a lot in Black history that goes unspoken or not shared, or, you know, like, my grandmother's mom was still a slave. Like, this is still something very fresh and new, and we are still unpacking what it means for us, you know. So I also want people to understand, like, we can't educate you because we're still learning too, you know. And even like when I arrived to college, my now best friend, you know, I remember going up to her. I went to a predominantly private white college, and wealthy white college, right? And I remember seeing my first Black girl on the side, and I was like, you know, seeing like, hey, what's up, another Black girl, like, let's be friends. And she was like, oh, that's so great you see me as a Black girl, because I'm actually African, you know, from Kenya, and I don't know about the Black experience. So she educated me on what it was like to be a Kenyan American in America and be assumed that she was eating soul food at every holiday when she was not. Right. And it was so wonderful to share the experience where I'm still learning. I'm here to learn. And I think staying curious and staying interested and understanding that you're going to grieve over things I don't understand, that doesn't mean I leave, and that doesn't discount it, you know. So I think to my allies looking to be advocates, like, be here in this learning space with us. No one has arrived, but at least stay on the journey with us, you know.
That's right.
Okay. I hear you. I feel like this all kind of falls under one big umbrella of conversations I've had too many times to count, which is, I don't see in color. Katrina, I'm colorblind. Isn't that the right way to look at this? No, it's not. It might be in Madagascar, where there's only animals and they don't have to live under the tyranny of racism. But guess what? We live in America. We were built and will always exist in a racial climate. You must see in color, because I have to every day. So if that's my reality, it is also yours, whether you want to admit it or not. Mm-hmm. So why not in 2020, go ahead and admit it, so we can get that out of the way and have real conversations. And I think that's the hardest part about people deciding to live in their privilege and be colorblind, is that it discounts my conversation. And I think that talks about a few things that we as friends have talked about, which is comparing pain, which is saying that this has happened as a one-time incident, or maybe these shootings together, they can be strung together, but they don't count for anything, which discounts the systematic racism that truly says that slavery still exists. And well, for me, it will always exist, because that's how America was created. It was created on there always being some body of people enslaved, whether mm-hmm. those were the Native Americans, mm-hmm. the Mexican Americans, and now Black America, you know, whatever group we would like to enslave, there will always be enslavement here in America. So I think the real truth, the real eyes, the real perspective I'm hoping is, how can we take off those shackles mm-hmm. for each other?
To unpack it.
How, yeah, and what does that look like? And I think it's 2020. Don't mm-hmm. come at me with the BS about being colorblind anymore. Mm-hmm. That was cute, and maybe 2000 that was cute, but it's too long, it's too far, it's not real. I want to have real conversations, you mm-hmm. know. As we've seen with Ahmaud, life is short. I want to know that he didn't die for anything. And that's the conversation I tried to have with people 8 years ago about Trayvon. I said, I have to know that he did not die for nothing, that we are moving this conversation forward. And seeing a lot of our white friends and family speak up, it does give me a little shred of hope that maybe this conversation is worth having.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so interesting. I want to pile on right there for a quick second, which is, when a lot of folks reached out to me this week, they were asking for specific steps. Like, I want you to tell me exactly what to do. And I can't come up with a comprehensive list of all the micro steps that you can take on a daily basis. But to your point, when you dig in to understand the system and how it is entangled across, like, all major institutions within our society, then it informs how you begin to show up. So you look at things like, oh, when I show up at school and I see little Black boys characterized by their teachers as rowdy or rambunctious or disproportionately disciplined, for the same behavior some of the other kids are facing, you'll speak up and you'll talk about it, because you've now done the work and you've looked at what this looks like in childhood education. Or you'll look at things like, oh, you know, when do I lock the door to my car in front of my kids? Like, who's walking by my car when I do that and when I don't? And it informs the way that you show up in the world. And suddenly those steps and actions, from those micro steps all the way to the macro, which is like, how do we vote? What do we do?
Yes, yes, yes,
like,
yes,
right?
Yes,
like, all yes. of that begins to come into shape for you if you've done the work behind it on the system, yep. not just looking at the shootings.
Right.
Did I cut you off, Key?
No, I was just gonna, that's what I was gonna say after you were finished, was voting, and on all levels, you know what I mean? Like,
that's right.
Your mayor, whatever it may be.
Local, federal.
Local, government, all of that, like, it should be informed by acknowledging that the system is jacked, and it wasn't meant to support us, people that look like us, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? So I think people need to look past, like, oh, I'm a Christian, so I feel like I have to vote for so-and-so. Like, no.
No.
That's not
it. Or fill in the blank, whatever that is.
Fill in the blank, like, whatever it might be for you. Like, if that's what you're basing your vote on, then there's a real big problem there. And you're continuing, and you're continuing this. You're just a piece of this. You're part of the problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you really acknowledge the fact that just because so-and-so says that, you know, I'm trying not to get too political.
No, I think you're right, Kiana, because it's like Christianity, this is bigger than Christianity. And I know that's hard for a lot of people to understand.
Right.
But this is bigger than that one category, that one title.
Yeah.
Because when Ahmad is ambushed and shot with a shotgun in broad daylight, that is not about Christianity. No one asked him if he believed in the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit before mm-hmm. they shot him.
Right.
So this has to be a bigger conversation, and it has to go beyond our titles and our categories for each other. And voting is a huge way of doing that. And, you know, Thomas Jefferson was a Christian. Abraham Lincoln, a Christian.
Was Christian, and they all slaves and all the things.
let me read you this tweet that I saw today that I was like, save. It's like, whenever a church leader declares theology determines politics, I'm innately skeptical. And not because theology can't inform politics, but because the implicit mandate from power about power to preserve power makes me question the integrity of that power.
Yes.
Yeah.
Y'all, I just gotta thank you. Let me pause. So what we have done is pull together several outstanding resources for our listeners and for those who've asked as they begin this journey. So as you start to engage, you'll be able to find that in the caption on the podcast, also on my Instagram at @2_blue_fish. @2_blue_fish. But I just, like, my parting, you know, admonition is, as you start to engage, you're going to encounter facts and sentiments and perspectives that are going to make you deeply uncomfortable. Resist the urge to defend or retreat. Just assume that Black people and people of color are the experts in their own experience. And keep in mind that, you know, this list is in no way exhaustive. You can just consider it the starter guide, and you'll start to develop your own informed perspective and who else you begin to follow and what other voices you begin to respect in this space. So, all right, we're gonna close it down because I think all of us are on borrowed time with nap time. I know mine are about to wake up. I think yours too.
Yes, I feel it. I feel them.
I do. Yeah, suddenly it was like this hair just moved right here. I was like, oh gosh, Carter is awake. So I wanna close it down with my segment for whoever needs to hear this right now. I'm gonna ask each of you to just leave us with something, you know, your takeaway, advice, encouragement, whatever you want it to be, but for whoever needs to hear it right now. Kat, let me start with you.
Whoever needs to hear this right now, I want to tell you, I'm hurt. I'm really hurt. I'm hurting. And I don't speak for every Black woman. So get to know us individually. Take your time. And get to know us. Look at your feed. Go through your text messages. Go through your emails. Are there people of color in your life? When's the last time you have been over to someone's house that did not look like you, that did not talk like you, and that did not vote like you. America, you are beautiful and diverse, but we need to get to know each other. This segregation has to end with us.
For whoever needs to hear this, I would like you to hear that we don't think all white people are bad. We don't think y'all are all bad people. We don't think that. I would say that personally, I want to see more of you show up for us, you know, like, and more than just reposting and running with Mod. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see a lot of what Katrina said. Like, I want to sit down with you, get to know you, do life with you. And I want you to know that being colorblind is not a good thing, because in the end, you're saying you don't see me and you don't see my struggle. You're not acknowledging that it's real, that it's here. So being colorblind is not, it's not where you want to be at all. You need to see us for who we are. And we're not scary. Like, we are not scary. We are people just like you. You know what I mean? Like, we love just like you can love. We love hard. We love deep. That's why we're still friends and doing life with people that are like some of you, who are just now taking interest in the things and these types of matters and how they affect us. So, we don't think you're all bad. Mm-hmm. We don't.
Yo, this is the invitation. Mm-hmm. You will go out and do the work, and we'll meet you right back here, and let's go shake some shit up together. Yeah. Guys, I want to wish you a happy Mother's Day. I am so grateful to you for expending your time.
Thank you.
Energy. And joining me on this, I just feel blessed to have some sisters like this who I can link arms up with and go out and make a force field for our boys to be able to make it, right? So that my prayer is, dear God, when these boys leave this house, let them come back.
Yeah.
And Tiger said it. And if he ain't a prophet, I don't know who is.
Thank you so much for having us. Thank you. Thank you. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day, friends.
Right.